Hello, and welcome to the Small Business University Audio Presentation of the Month. This monthly CD and web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching small business owners how to run profitable companies. Each month, a different national speaker or business owner shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. If you are tired of putting up with poor productivity, low morale, and high turnover, then it just might be time for the company leadership to try something new. Servant leadership is an effective approach that can literally inspire employees to become more fully engaged in their work while becoming more productive. Joe Kittinger has been studying servant leadership for over 15 years and is the how-to authority for implementing servant leadership and growing employee engagement. He is the author of the book, Brander in Chief, and he resides in Green Bay, Wisconsin with his wife and four children. If you want to take a fresh look at leadership, then I'd suggest you get comfortable and prepare to take some notes. Now, let's listen to Joe.
Well, this is Joe Kittinger from About Me International, and I'm excited to be here with you today to introduce you to a movement that's sweeping the world called servant leadership. It started in the 70s with Robert Greenleaf, and there is the Robert Greenleaf Center on Servant Leadership located in Indiana. And you can certainly Google the Servant Leadership Institute. But what is servant leadership, and how has it moved my life, and how has it increased employee engagement? Well, there are some famous companies that you're well aware of that implement servant leadership philosophy into their business. Starbucks, to name one. Southwest Airlines, which is just killing the airline industry. All other competitors pale in comparison with the profits that Southwest Airlines generates. And to understand how these companies are successful, it's all about employee engagement. And that word engagement often gets misunderstood. What do we mean by engagement? Well, I will tell you how I define engagement is employees care. They seriously care about the mission of the company, who they work with. They go above and beyond, not because they feel threatened that they have to work late or they can't work here, but they go above and beyond because they truly care. They want to deliver their responsibility within the organization. They want to be the best at it. And they end up working when technically they're not on the clock, so to speak. Why? Because they're engaged. They care. So let's talk about this idea of servant leadership and what is a servant leader. Well, a servant leader is one who treats each individual as unique. They are strict but fair, and they provide the legitimate needs of those they lead. In other words, a servant leader is no different than being a good parent. I will tell you that good parenting and good leadership are exactly the same. And as you're going through your life and you're discovering servant leadership, the same principles that we're going to talk about today should also be applied to your family. Because I really truly believe that sometimes we get so caught up in our business that we forget the most important people and we almost leave them behind, and that's our family, our children, our spouses. To me, picking the right spouse is 90% of your success. So let's talk about servant leadership, and let's stay more on the business aspect of servant leadership, even though, like I said, a good parent and a good leader are exactly the same. They treat each individual as unique. They're strict but fair, which means that they have values and they have rules to follow. And if you go outside those rules, they're not quick to stomp on you or criticize you, but they're more curious as to, do you have enough information? Were you aware of the rules? They learn about the information. If you truly were aware, then here are the consequences that you're aware, you know, that need to be followed. But if there was some sort of gap there of communication, then they correct it right there on the spot. So they're strict but fair. And they provide for the legitimate needs of those they lead. A servant leader believes that the employee must believe in the leader before they will believe in the mission. I'm going to say that again. A servant leader believes that an employee must first believe in their leader before they will believe in the mission. A servant leader believes they must succeed in the workplace before they can succeed in the marketplace. Their belief leads them to employee engagement, an employee who cares about their job, an employee who goes the extra mile and contributes to the mission of the company. Treating an individual as unique means knowing their motivations and how they want to be treated. It's different strokes for different folks. Let's face it. I often get in some wonderful debates on the golden rule, which is to treat others how you want to be treated. And I don't believe that that works great as a metaphor to use for children. However, in the workplace, we don't always want to be treated the same. Some of us love explicit instruction as to how to get something done. Some of us pride ourselves on figuring out how to do it. Just tell me what you want to have done. And it can almost be insulting if you start going down the path of this is how you should do it when that person just wants to know what should be done. So everyone wants to be treated differently. Some folks want details. Some folks just want the bottom line. So let's agree for the moment, at least while listening to this, that we don't want to be treated the same, that we all want to be treated how we want to be treated. So I've come across this platinum rule, which is treat others how they want to be treated. And the only way you know how a person wants to be treated is to truly understand their motivational makeup, not their personality, but what motivates them on a day-to-day basis to be successful. So strict but fair, again, leads to accountability. And let's talk about these legitimate needs. They meet legitimate needs. Well, what are they? Well, servant leaders meet three fundamental legitimate needs that build engagement that result in employees caring. The legitimate needs are financial. They have to be paid fairly. Maybe they're not paid what they want, but they're paid what is fair in the marketplace and the role that they play. These legitimate needs are financial. They're also physical. They need the technology. They need the temperature, 72 degrees. They need whatever stuff they need to get their job done. So they're physical. That's what physical means. And then there's emotional needs. We all have them, but for whatever reason, and I guess I know why, we think emotional needs are handling their private needs at home. That's not what we're talking about. Emotional needs are those things that we all need in order to be successful. I'm going to name a few of these emotional needs. Self-awareness. We all want validation for who we are. Relationship. Everyone wants a relationship with their coworker and their leader. Like, they want to connect. I want to know you. Trust, which is a fundamental emotional need. Inspiring trust through perhaps candor. Candor is honest communication that's delivered in a safe place and in a safe way. Clear expectations. This emotional need is, I need to know what you expect of me and what you expect in my department. Another emotional need, being heard. After this employee gives feedback, if they're allowed to give feedback, which some companies do not promote, is there follow-through? Do they receive credit for who they are and then for what they do? It's so important to have people care that you acknowledge them for who they are and then tie that into what they do. Now, let me give you an example of that. When you identified, let's say someone's motivation is they pride themselves in the ability to figure out how to do something on their own. They're those people who don't like to be told what to do. They just want to be told, you know, what do you want to have happened? I'll figure out how to do it. Okay, let's assume we're talking about that person. When you see that person succeed in what they do, in whatever that task is, the greatest compliment you can pay them is to talk like this to them. You know, Joni, we'll say Joni. Joni, you have such an amazing way of figuring things out. I've noticed that throughout your career and whatever you do. You know, folks are, when they get in a jam, it seems like everyone goes to Joni to figure things out. Now there you're celebrating and validating her for her motivation of figuring things out. Then you go to what she did. You know, in that last project, there were a lot of loose ends. I didn't have all the answers, but you dug into it and you found all the answers and you came up with a plan for how to do it. And that is the reason this project was successful. Now you are celebrating who Joni is and then how those motivations helped her to accomplish what she needed to do. So everything we do at About Me International is helping companies identify those legitimate emotional needs, because we're pretty good at the physical, we're pretty good at the strict but fair, but folks just do not know how to tap into those emotional needs. So in my business, I have a radio talk show, and I have interviewed several servant leaders over time. And what this audio program is a collection of those interviews. Some I did over the phone, some I did face-to-face. So you're going to perhaps hear a little audio levels change, and that is the reason. It's been accumulated over the last couple of years. I certainly am not providing you every interview I've done, as this audio program we're trying to keep within 40 to 45 minutes, but it will highlight the key individuals who help bring servant leadership and educate servant leadership to the world. The first individual I'd like to introduce you to is James Hunter. Jim has written the book, The Servant. It's a great place for you to start on your journey. Look up, Google, The Servant. He is an international authority on servant leadership. He speaks all over the world and has sold millions of copies. He also has a second book on servant leadership and is about to release his third. Here's my interview with Jim Hunter. J.D. Hunter & Associates was founded, you founded that company in 85.
85, mm-hmm.
So the last, was that 25 years now? Or
yeah, that'd be 25.
Yeah, 25 years. You've been coaching a lot of companies, and you must have wonderful stories about a company maybe furthest from servant leadership but wanting it, or just completely not understanding it, and then having your influence guide them. And then this outcome of what happened after servant leadership was driven into the culture or inspired mm-hmm. into the culture. Could you tell us one of those stories?
Oh, my goodness, there are so many. In fact, I got into teaching leadership after working with a lot of really dysfunctional organizations. My first, about the first 10 years that I was in labor relations in Detroit, from 85 to roughly 95, I did union elections with companies that were going through serious labor relations problems, union drives, strikes, violence, sabotage, turnover, absenteeism, low commitment, low morale, wherever it was. And what I discovered, Joe, was that the issue was not the union. It wasn't Chucky on the forklift handing out union cards. That wasn't the problem. The problem was leadership. Every time I went into an organization, that was the problem. So generally what would happen back then was by the time we would get through their problems and get them back and going the right way, they were so shell-shocked by what they had been through that they were very open. They were very teachable. They wanted to do what was necessary to avoid this in the future. And that's one of the very important qualities of people who want to move in this direction. I mean, you've got to be teachable. You've got to be willing to say, you know what? What I've been doing isn't working. And I always say to people, you know, look at your leadership. How are you doing as a dad? How are you doing as a spouse? How are you doing as a coach, a teacher, a boss? Is it working for you? I mean, look at the fruit. You want to know how the leader's doing, you look at the people. Are you getting the fruit you want to get out of your leadership? And when we're not, that can create the friction that's necessary to impel people to change. So in terms of organizations that I've worked with that have done this, oh my gosh, there are so many, many of which, most of which, your listeners would never have heard of these organizations. Small organizations, anywhere from 100 to a couple of thousand employees. But usually it's where the CEO has had a real wake-up call, and they decide, my gosh, you know, what I'm doing hasn't been working. They have a little epiphany, and we teach them the principles of servant leadership, and they become enlightened. They start working on their behavior and making the necessary changes to start serving people and moving from command and control and dominating and lording over people to a servant style where we identify and meet their needs for respect and appreciation and listening and accountability and all the needs that people have, and then they start to see the fruit come. I remember one in particular. This was probably 20 years ago. I had a client that this guy was literally a Marine. He was a Marine sergeant in Vietnam, and he was just as tough a command and control guy as you can imagine. I mean, he was just, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. He was just a tough, neck down type of a leader, and went through a significant emotional event and realized he had to change. And so we presented these principles of servant leadership, and he just started executing. I mean, he just started getting after it. And so what happened was the world started responding differently to me, and differently to him, and it just absolutely rocked his world. And the more he practiced, the more feedback from the world he got in terms of effectiveness. And it just motivated them to do more, and that's the exciting part, is when you can get people to just start practicing, and when then they see how the world reacts to them, it can be a motivator for the future. So it's just getting people started. I mean, again, I could give you tons of stories about it, Joe, but the stories are all very similar. It's getting people to get out and start hitting the ball. You got to practice this stuff. You don't do it intellectually.
How does a company, especially maybe a smaller company, let's say up to 100 folks, how do they get started? Maybe they can't afford a full mentoring program, but what can they do right now just to start going on that path?
Yeah. Well, like as I said, the first is you have to detect a need. You know, Stephen Covey used to say, few people have the humility to change without some pain, without some friction. I mean, so I think the first step is a realization that you want to grow and you want to change. And that's the first step. Then you kind of got to begin with the end in mind. You got to know where you're going. So it's important to get some education about what servant leadership is, do some reading, and I mean there's a ton of resources available on the net and other places that can really get you up to snuff pretty quick on what it is and what you need to do. So that seems to me to be the first step, is setting that standard of where you want to go and what you want to be, and be real clear about that. Then the second step is, once you're clear about where you're heading, then you got to identify your gaps between where you are and where you need to be. And there are some tools available that can help you to do that. And you don't even need a formalized tool. You can just start asking people, get some feedback from people. How you doing in terms of your leadership? And have your supervisory people in the organization do the same thing. Get some 360 feedback from peers, subordinates, superiors, maybe customers, suppliers, family members, people who can give you some honest, straight-up feedback about how you're doing against that standard of servant leadership. Are you patient? Are you kind? Do you listen well? Are you giving encouragement? Are you humble? Do you treat people with respect? Are you selfless? Do you meet the needs of others? Are you forgiving? Are you honest? Do you hold people accountable for their actions? Are you committed, fully committed? So start getting some feedback around the principles of servant leadership to identify clearly where your gaps are. Don't assume you know what you need to be working on. A lot of us have blind spots. And it's important that you get some, you know, we got to be sure we're scratching the right itch. So first step is set the standard. Second step is identify the gaps. Then the third step is eliminate the gaps. In other words, put together some plans. What are you going to do so you haven't been appreciating people? All right. Well, no. That doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means you've got a bad habit. So you can change that habit. So put together a plan of what you're going to do about that. Let's say, for example, okay, from now on, two times a day, I'm going to catch two people doing something right. And I'm not going to leave the building until I can give people sincere, specific appreciation. And I'm going to keep track of it. You know, the Japanese taught us, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. So you put together a specific, measurable plan of what you're going to do, and then you get out and you start hitting the ball.
So there you have a portion of my interview with James Hunter. And really, activity will spurt results. You just have to do something. So when Jim talks about hitting the ball, you have to start somewhere, whether it's I haven't been appreciating people, I haven't been listening to people. You really need to create a system of where you're going to start. And it might just be with some of those core basics that we've learned maybe in kindergarten, but we have to be reminded as we grow up as an adult. Now I'd like to introduce you to Tom Thibodeau. I am talking today, folks, with Tom Thibodeau. Tom is the director of the master's program in servant leadership at Viterbo University. It is the only university in the country that has a master's in servant leadership, and I felt this would be a perfect, the next step after talking with Jim Hunter, servant leadership guru. So Tom, thanks for being here, and why don't you tell people, why do people want a servant leadership master's degree? Tell us about some of your students.
Well, thank you, Joel. I think it was summed up best with one of our students who was a director of a nutrition program in a public school, and her superintendent asked her, why do you want to get a master's in servant leadership? And she said, because I want to change the world. And what we understand about servant leadership is that it's a practical way in which people can put their ideals into practice in the workplace. So what happens is that we have professionals who come from a variety of different, from real estate, from financial businesses, from nonprofit organizations, from people who are doing church work, who all want to learn how they can develop their personal and professional skills in being better servants and better leaders.
So you talk about your ideals. Tell me more about that. What do you mean by allowing their ideals to enter the workplace?
Well, what we understand is that people are guided by altruism, that people want to do good for other people, that this is part of the core of who we are as human beings. You look at the generous response of our nation, for instance, to Haiti, how we responded earlier to the tsunami, when people have benefits for their co-workers who need help with medical expenses, or because of a tragedy that they've experienced in their lives. People on a regular basis will reach out to strangers because there's something within us that we understand that we belong to a larger community than ourselves.
Wow.
And that we have a natural inclination to want to serve other people. And when you bring that to a conscious level and you begin to study it and you begin to practice it, your influence extends much further beyond yourself.
You know, I was just reading a Success magazine. Tony Hsieh, who is the president of Zappos, which is that shoe company out in Las Vegas, he is studying happiness. And they've just been doing some wonderful programs. You know, whether they call it servant leadership or not, it clearly is. But Tom, wouldn't you say that really what surrounds servant leadership is just an overall happiness?
Well, there's certainly about a happiness in terms of doing good. Sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. All of us understand that we reap what we sow. And what becomes important at this point is that what we reap today will be sown into the lives of our children and our grandchildren within our communities. So why is it that we would not choose to sow that which is good? I activate in terms of our ideals. What is good for a whole community or a neighborhood or an organization? Why wouldn't I want every member of my organization or my business to be successful in their personal and professional lives? Because their own success builds on the success that gets translated to people who we come in contact with. So I think you're absolutely correct, that there's a joy that comes from giving and from serving. It's not always easy, but it's good, it's noble, and it's true.
And I like what you said, servant leadership transcends just at the workplace. It's not like you punch out and now you're done being a servant leader. I mean, it goes into your family, it goes into your friendships, and it goes into just your own community involvement.
Yes, any of us, if we want to know how is it that we're doing in our professional lives, the work that we're doing as a servant and as a leader, all I have to do is ask my wife, how am I doing? She'll tell me.
Yeah.
All I have to do is ask my children. They'll tell me. All I have to do is ask my friends, how is it that I am as a friend? Am I self-centered or am I selfless in the way in which I pay attention to the needs of other people? That's the struggle that each of us has. And when the studying in terms of servant leadership, what we study, we begin to understand. What we begin to understand, we begin to practice.
So let's talk about that study. How many folks, on average, in a year, I want to know how long does it take to get a servant leadership master's program? What is the structure, and what kind of folks participate in the program? And how many do you have right now?
Right now, we have 72 active students in our program. It takes an average of 18 months. Our courses are offered on Friday nights and Saturdays in a cohort style where people come together. And it's amazing the sense of community that begins to build. We do it during the school year, and then also in the summertime, we have a 12-day intensive institute in which people take courses 8 hours a day for the 12 days, earning up to 12 credits. And then they have blended work that they continue on after they leave. And so we have people coming from Atlanta, Georgia. We've had people coming from Connecticut. We have people coming from Iowa and different parts of Wisconsin in order to study servant leadership together. And what happens in that, there's a cross-fertilization that begins to take place. So you have your for-profit businesses operating with people who, for instance, are a director of a United Way agency. They're being in contact with somebody who is working in hospice, working with somebody who is a vice president of operations at a medical facility. And all of a sudden, they begin to recognize that they may be in different settings, but that their needs are the same. The needs are the same. What's taking place in every organization across the country today is this. Human need is increasing. Just think for a moment how sick you have to be to stay one night in the hospital. Human need is increasing. Two, scarce resources are becoming scarcer. Everyone in every organization is being asked to do more with less. And third, levels of accountability, assessment, evaluation are there in every organization. So you begin to understand that we are not all that different. Therefore, you find common ground, and when you find common ground, you find allies who help you to move your own work and organization forward.
So can you give me some examples of how these students then bring servant leadership into their organization, and then furthermore, what have been some of the results you've seen so far? You've been doing this for now 10 years.
For 10 years, right.
Talk to me about, you know, some of those examples.
Well, let me give you an example from the VA in Tomah, Wisconsin. The VA in Tomah, Wisconsin has been practicing servant leadership for 10 years within their organization. Here you have the federal government, healthcare, and the military in those three major organizations in the VA. And what they understand is that, and they have a very clear sense of mission, every day is Veterans Day. So what we teach people in servant leadership is pay attention to the needs of the people that you serve. And out of that comes a great level of awareness and then a more concentrated form of service. One of the women began to pay attention to a gentleman who was going to go on one of the freedom flights out to Washington, D.C., that's there for our honorable World War II vets. He didn't have a ride. She got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. She drove to Tomah, Wisconsin. She had to make arrangements to have a vehicle which could take him in his wheelchair. She drives him back into La Crosse, Wisconsin, awaits with him, then introduces him to his guardian, who takes him out to Washington, D.C. Then she's there at 11 o'clock at night when the man returns home, and she drives him back out to the VA with his wheelchair and makes sure that he's safely in bed. This ends up at being at 1 o'clock in the morning. And then she recognizes how many other veterans would love to go on the Freedom Flight but have no idea how they would provide for their transportation. What they've done in the organization now, people from across the VA are volunteering time in order to make sure that they can provide transportation so that more vets get a chance to be on the Freedom Flight and see the World War II Memorial. Why? Uh-huh. Because one woman paid attention to the needs of one man, and now it has become operational within your organization and institution. And that's what begins to happen. You pay attention to the needs of one person, and all of a sudden you begin to recognize that that is tied to the life that we all live, and that other people then want to participate in that.
Now, Tom, you have a grand goal, which just gets me very excited. But your goal is to have La Crosse, Wisconsin become the very first servant leadership city in America. What is your vision on that? What would have to happen in order to get that prestigious label?
Well, what would happen is that we start bringing our organizations and our institutions together. So we begin to recognize that our public school system is servant-led by the superintendent and the Board of Education. And we look in terms of city government, and we look in terms of our businesses, that like a Festival Food and a Dahl Ford and other businesses that are having an impact within our community. Then you look in terms of higher education, and then you look in terms of neighborhood associations, and we all have the goal of serving and leading together. That creates the environment that our children and grandchildren live in. So that a student graduating from high school goes to work for one of these servant-led organizations, and then their character is helped to be built and molded. Then they come on to higher education, and higher education continues to develop that. Then they begin to graduate, and they start to look for companies, and they bring that same attitude and ethos into the companies that they're going to work for. And all of a sudden, you have an organization that, instead of a city and a community that's, instead of being divided, is joining together for the common good.
That's a beautiful dream, Tom, and I think it's achievable because, as you said, we all have it inside of us. We all have this need to give, this need to understand people. And you know what? It feels great when you meet their legitimate needs, doesn't it?
Well, it really does. I'll give you another just a practical example. A week ago, I was in Green Bay, and I was working with one of my partners there, and they delivered an About Me card to the people in the company that they were working for. And what this About Me card is it's positive feedback in terms of your strengths and abilities in the workplace. And I was amazed that the people sitting around that group, all adults, how little affirmation and feedback that they receive on a regular basis. And what happens is when people get insights to their own gifts and abilities, they lighten up. There's a look of confidence. There was an easy laughter within the room because somebody took the time to say, this is about you. These are the things that you do well. How many of us are hungry for affirmation and recognition in our workplace? I don't know of many people whose work really improves much better when they are constantly criticized or belittled. I do recognize people that when they feel supported, affirmed, and recognized, they can be challenged to do more than they ever thought was possible.
Well, Tom, if some of our listeners are interested in learning more about the master's program at Viterbo University, should they just go to the website?
They can go to the Viterbo website at viterbo.edu.
There's my interview with Tom Thibodeau. Again, his website is Viterbo, viterbo.edu, for more information on the Masters of Servant Leadership program. At the heart of servant leadership is self-reflection. We must first self-reflect on who we are before we can start serving another. You've heard it's been said that you cannot love another until you first love yourself. When you fly in an airplane, you must first put on your own mask before assisting another with their mask. So this theme goes with servant leadership as well. You could not possibly serve another until you understand who you are and how you come across. My next interview is with Larry Bellotta, and this is quite a spirited interview. I think you're really going to enjoy this. He helps us at the core of servant leadership identify who we are and then identify how to properly serve another. All right, I'm here with Larry Bellotta. Larry, thanks for being a part of the Monday Mastermind interview.
Well, Joe, I wouldn't have come unless you had called me.
Larry and I have worked together. We are currently working on a project that's going to be launched in fall, and I thought it'd be really important to share what he has taught me with all of you, because it is relationships. Relationships fuel business. It fuels, between employees, between salespeople or organizations and their clients. It's all about relationships. So, Larry, where do we begin in this huge subject of relationships?
Well, you've managed people. And I've managed people,
yeah.
And we've had some experiences, and they haven't been good, right?
Yeah.
And we've been managed by people,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what do we always see, Joe? We see that people don't understand the people they work with. And so let me start with this. We treat people that we manage the way they treated us yesterday. So if they treated us good yesterday, we come in the next morning and we treat them good, right?
Right.
And if they treated us bad yesterday, we come in, we got a chip on our shoulder about the way they treated us bad. And that's the way we treat them, right? So if somebody is, you have those people you're just in sync with and it just clicks. And you just don't know why it clicks. It just works. But you've got one person usually, sometimes two people that you manage that directly report to you who you just don't understand. They just get under your craw. They just make you feel unsettled, right?
Yeah.
Those are the people that create tension. And tension is really what actually makes business break down.
But what is the root of tension? I mean, if you had to define, why is there tension?
Well, that's easy. It's understanding. I don't understand people. Right. I'll tell you a great story. I'm sorry. It's not a great story. It's a story. All right. This is my first management experience of my life. It was back in the 80s. I was in an advertising agency, and I got to hire my first person. Of course, I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't know anything about people. So I hire this person, and I got one mission in mind, find somebody who can do the work. So I'm looking at all the people's work, and I finally find this girl who can do the work. And I go, I'm looking at the work. I'm not looking at the person, right?
Right.
And so I'm not thinking about stuff like how we get along and all that. So I hire her, right? And I start working with her, and she's just not like me really at all. And I don't really know why. And so it starts to get tense, it gets tense, and I don't like really her, and she doesn't like me, and I'm making little sarcastic things, and she's making little sarcastic things, and right? And then it gets just to a point where she doesn't even want to talk to me anymore, but we have to work together.
Sure.
So she gives me a job and throws it on my desk, and I want to have an explanation, but it's just too much tension, so right. I can't talk to her, so I have to look at it and interpret what it all means. I can't ask her about anything, so we can't communicate, we can't get together, can't go through, ideas or anything. Why? Too much tension.
Right.
So what happened finally is that she couldn't stand it so bad that she quit. And she quit by surprise. Like, she just announced it, like, I'm not taking this anymore. And I'm thinking, am I so bad? am I such a bad
guy?
Well,
my story isn't maybe quite as dramatic, but certainly... it hits a point. Growing up, I've always was misinterpreted as irresponsible because I was always that creative, funny kid, And even getting average grades, I had to be creative on how I did that. I would study last minute. I would partner with people, not cheat, but I would partner with people who could help me. But I just wasn't book smart, And so I was often interpreted as just a fun, he's a cute kid, but I don't know if Joey's going to amount to anything, that kind of a thing.
You were just too funny.
Yeah, I was just too funny and too goofy. And even in my first formal job with when I had my first boss, in corporate America, I was very successful at what I did. However, I always had this feeling, and usually feelings are very right, this feeling in my gut that no one really took me too seriously. Didn't really understand my true capabilities and what I was able to do because I lived in this world of fun. And Larry has taught me about, you put it in terms of countries, and I think it'd be important to explain that. If you understand these four countries that people reside in, it helps create understanding right there.
Countries is a great analogy, it's real simple, real simple. Four countries, and this is from Hippocrates, who invented the figured out four people centuries ago, and wrote about it in Greek. but what he was talking about when he talked about the four countries, he's talking about fun people, and control people, and perfect people, and peace people. If you think about those four words, that's literally how these people live. Fun people live for fun, and control people live to control their environment, and perfect people live to pursue perfection, and peace people live to pursue peace and harmony and getting along. Well, that's the four worlds, right? Now, if you understand those four people, and you start realizing the person I hired, I'm from fun country. I want to have fun. I want to be social. I want to laugh. I want to joke. I want everything to be silly, like you, Joe. Yeah. See, we're from the same country. That's why we get along so well. So she's from perfect country. Now, a perfect country, the people from, a good thing to know about perfect people is they're from the arts and the sciences. All the arts and the sciences people all come from this place called perfect country. In fact, the government is full of them, okay?
Okay.
Colleges are full of them. Corporate America loves perfect people, right? The arts, what are they? The comedians, the actors, the singers, the poets, the playwrights. But the sciences are the technicians, the scientists, the doctors and all that. Those are all the arts and sciences people. Why are they so serious? You know, like that Joker line in the Batman movie. Why so serious? Well, that applies to perfect people because they are so serious people, you know. And that's who this lady was that I hired. She was from perfect country, and they're very serious. They want things to be right. Mm-hmm. Well, what do fun people want? We want to have
relax.
Fun.
Let's make it up as we go along. We'll figure it out.
That's right, because that's fun for us, right?
Sure.
So when you just understand these four countries, if you understand that fun people are extremely social, if you understand that control people are very accomplishment-driven, they're not patient people. If you ask them to be patient, they just don't know what to do about that, right? And then if you got perfect people, those people are very serious, they're very sensitive, they want things to be right. And if you don't understand their passion for that, you're going to be irritated if you're not from that place. And peace people, bless their hearts, which is the majority of the world, by the way, is these people are all about getting along, and they don't talk a lot. They're not chatty people. They're pretty calm, mm-hmm. stable, even going people, right?
And so, obviously, the world can't be run by us fun, crazy people.
No.
Because I don't think anything would – I mean, I know I struggle with getting the task things done. And I really do rely on perfect people and peace people to help me with that. And they – from what I found, they enjoyed that.
And actually, when you found out about the four countries, didn't you actually become a better manager almost like overnight?
I did. I mean, we had associates who you could misinterpret because their peace country is being disengaged.
Yeah.
You know, because they want to go woohoo and start screaming and skipping around, you know, the office like some of us folks would do. And you think, wow, they're just not engaged. And that's completely not true.
Yeah, what was the criticism that was given to you when you were employed? You were called...
I was called irresponsible.
Irresponsible.
Or, you know, you're just not serious.
That's
and
right.
I'm like, I know.
I know.
I love being here. Are you kidding?
I'm not serious.
But on a serious note, it really has... made a profound impact in my life and on my marriage as well. I mean, I married a peace, fun person. You know, she's a peace gal who I've gotten so much clarity with, and same with her to me.
You know, you don't slow down, right? But she does slow down.
Right.
She's very good at that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because she slows down, she thinks things through, and you think things very quick and very fast, and you miss stuff, right?
That's right.
Isn't that true? Doesn't she tell you that you miss stuff?
Absolutely. I mean,
well,
people remind me stuff all the time.
Peace people don't miss things. Right? I used to actually be very offended by peace people because I thought they didn't think I was funny.
Yeah.
And I was irritated by that because you should think I'm funny, right?
Right.
Well, but they don't think I'm funny because they're very serious. And in fact, as a tip for the listeners to this show, here's a really good way to identify the four countries.
That'd be great.
Yeah, great way to find. What do we know? So you got to think process of elimination. Okay, when you see a person and you want to know what country they're from, the first thing you do is check fun country. Okay, is the face moving? Like lots of facial expressions. Is the voice moving? Lots of highs and lows. Like oh, that's it. You know, oh no, right? Lots of highs and lows.
Okay.
And then the hands are moving. Fun people talk with their hands. And the body language is constantly moving. So when you think fun, everything's moving. Everything, voice, everything's moving. So when we get the next check, if that's not happening, then you go to peace country, which is the opposite, right?
Okay.
Nothing's moving, right? The hands are real still and the face is still and the voice is very monotone, like, well, Joe, I'm really glad to have you accept me on your radio show. And I think it's I think we'll find some interesting points to talk about. Well, that's how they sound. Mm-hmm. It's not moving.
It doesn't mean they're not passionate.
It doesn't mean they're not passionate.
Their subject.
It just means that's their way. That's their way. So nothing's moving. No, hands are not moving. Face is not moving. Voice is not moving. Nothing's moving. Right? And if you see that, that would be a peace person. Okay? Now, let's go on to the next check. If it's not fun, everything moving. If it's not peace, nothing's moving. Then go to perfect country. Now, perfect country, what happens here? This is, you know that little furrow people get in their brows where they squinch their eyebrows together, you know, that's the intensity of perfect country. And when you see those lines, that's a perfect person because these are the most intense, most sensitive people in the world. They pick up everything that's coming in, men and women, okay? So once you realize these people have a sign, the sign is they talk a lot to say a little, okay? So if I was a perfect person, I'd be talking to you, trying to make a point, okay? So we're working together, and I'd be saying, well, Joe, your earlier point was interesting, but I think the most important thing I'm trying to say is I had this experience downtown the other day. I got out of the car, and I went to the meter. What am I doing? I'm telling you all the things I could possibly feel because I'm trying to find the point.
Right. But at least you're focused. For fun country, we might go on tangents.
Well, fun countries, they do go on tangents. But perfect people are trying to get to their point, and it takes them a long time. And so fun people can get very irritated like that because fun people have, you know, they get kind of a short attention span, right?
Sure.
So the perfect people talk a lot to say a little, and that's how you know them. They do say a lot, okay? Whether they're men or whether they're a woman, they really will talk a lot. So, and watch for that furrowed brow and listen for that. A lot of talking, a lot of passion, a lot of urgency, like it's got to be right. Because that's perfect country. Perfect country is about right.
Got to get it right.
So now you've gone fun, lots of moving, peace, no movement at all, perfect, intensity, the eyebrows, you know, talk a lot to say a little. And finally, you end up in control country, which is the least number of people on the planet. Okay, it's control country. Yeah, control country. They're call the shots, bottom line, take charge, make stuff happen. Right? These are the people that run everything. You know, they run the Rotary Club, they run the city, they run run everything. Right? People with control natures always are running something. So how do you know them? They can talk like very quickly and kind of like a machine gun feel. Kind of like, they say things like bottom line. They say get to the point. They say, get to your point. So what's your point? Mm-hmm. They're very, like, I don't want to listen to you. What I want to listen to is me. Okay? So they'll talk machine gun like, that's not what you said yesterday. What you said yesterday was, right, I'm sorry about that, but that was yesterday. This is today. So what's your point?
Right. The purpose of understanding the country language you're in and the way you think is important because we all believe our way is the right way. Perfect country people believe that understanding all the details and everything along with that process is the right way. Control people believe that the details aren't as important, that we'll figure them out as we go along. Fun country people believe that we need to have fun and collaborate while we work. And peace people want to make it more efficient. And we all believe our way is the best way. And you know what? You're right. Your way is the best way for you and for people like you. But we all have different ways. Albert Einstein once said, you can't expect a fish to climb a tree. If you raised a fish with the aspiration to climb a tree, all that would happen is that the fish would feel like a failure its entire life. So that's what this understanding helps you do. By understanding how different people process and think, allows you as the leader to serve them, to allow them to be a great fish. Since this interview, my partnership with Larry Bellotta has created a really cool servant leadership tool called the About Me Card. You can create your About Me Card for free at aboutmecard.com. That's aboutmecard.com. Let me tell you what this little tool does. Not only will you learn what country you're from or the countries of others, but you also learn their About Me Card, which is the nuts and bolts. It's unique. It doesn't silo you into these countries anymore. The countries are fun to learn, but the About Me Card is how do I want to be treated? It's comprised of what you can expect from me and my do's and don'ts when we work together. But what will this help you do as a servant leader? Will help you bridge that communication gap. Why we get frustrated with individuals is because we don't understand them. This tool helps reduce turnover. It increases productivity It improves employee morale, reduces employee conflicts. Why? Because with the tool, it's an interpersonal tool. And it allows you to talk through each other's About Me card, understand how do we want to be treated. So instead of treating me how you want to treat me how I want to be treated. I'm so glad you've taken the opportunity to listen to these wonderful leaders in the servant leadership movement. I hope that you take a step, any step, whether it's get Jim Hunter's book, call Viterbo University, explore education programs in servant leadership, or whether you check out aboutmecard.com, understand how you tick, maybe have your spouse or coworkers create their card. Get started. Do something today to help bridge the communication and engagement gap in your organization. But remember, you got to hit the ball, as Jim Hunter said. This is not an intellectual exercise. Servant leadership is practiced every day, just like golf. You didn't learn how to swim by reading a book. You didn't learn how to become a scratch golfer by watching Tiger Woods videos. You hit the ball. You jumped in the pool. And that's what servant leadership is all about. It's an acquired skill that can be learned and taught, but you got to take time to listen, be humble, and hit the ball.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. The Small Business University audio series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.